Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Abortion is now banned in at least six states: Alabama, Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, South Dakota, and Texas. There are no exceptions for rape or incest. If providers break the law in many of those states, they could go to prison. An 18-year-old showed up at a clinic in Alabama hoping to get an abortion and was told they cannot help her. She told CNN she knew Roe v. Wade was overturned, but did not know it would go into effect immediately. When she learned that the clinic was closed, she said she immediately started crying. Here is a clip from CNN.
Do you feel sort of lost right now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you have any idea where you'll go?
Mm-mm.
Do you feel like you're going to be forced to have this baby?
I mean, I know I'm gonna get it done, but like I'm gonna try, cause I don't want it, and I don't wanna have it, so I'm gonna try to go somewhere, but it's just stressful because I feel like I might not be able to find a place in time.
Thanks to that clip from CNN. Additional bans are expected in the coming weeks. The courts will decide the outcome in about nine states, including Montana, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. Clinic workers are fielding hundreds of calls for patients who are desperate for appointments with no choice but to direct them to states where abortion remains legal. Abortion is protected in five states and is being expanded in seven, including Hawaii, Oregon, and California, according to the New York Times. Joining us to talk about what is happening right now, things are really changing. The legal field is just very chaotic. Things are actually changing by the day. We are joined by Andrea Goyagos, Executive Director of the Alamo Women's Reproductive Services in San Antonio, Texas. Hi, Andrea. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Kim Robinson is an independent liaison on reproductive issues, including the health of Black women for Black Women for Wellness. Hi, Kim. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me as well.
Robin Marty is operations director for the West Alabama Women's Center, a freelance reporter and author of Handbook for a Post-Roe America. Hi, Robin. Thanks for joining us again.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me back.
Well, I'd love to just ask you all what it was like when this decision came down. Let's start with you, Andrea. The Los Angeles Times had a piece, an in-depth piece, about what happened at your clinic. And your dad, Dr. Alan Braid, owned the clinic for many years. And he was in his office when you got the news and you had to tell him. What was that moment like for you and your dad?
You know, the decision was not surprising. We knew this was coming, but it was still just heartbreaking and devastating the moment that it happened, just the reality that it was actually happening. And knowing that we had a waiting room full of patients, you know, that were expecting to get services that day. It was a really hard day for all of us, for patients, for myself, staff, my father. It wasn't easy.
You know, one of the things that has really stayed with me over the week is hearing clinic workers who have been doing this work for decades, like your father, who is 77 and old enough to remember what abortion was like before Roe v. Wade. He treated women for infections from illegal abortions. What is he saying right now? I mean, what are his fears at this point? I mean, he said, I've got to figure out what I'm going to do with these patients, and I never thought I would see this day.
Right. That's something I've heard him say for years is, you know, as he's fought restrictive legislation in Texas and Oklahoma over the past several years, he'd never thought that we'd be facing a time of, you know, post-Roe and what that looked like. You know, he saw patients die. He's fearful that it's going to happen again. And just really feeling helpless, knowing that he has the skills to help people. And, you know, just based on the state that he practices in, he's not able to do that. And it's you know, obviously going to be incredibly impactful on many pregnant people across the country.
Robin, we had you on before the ruling came down, and you were talking about how you were all preparing at the West Alabama Women's Center. And according to CNBC, you have already, and I'm sure the number's gone up, you've had to cancel more than 100 appointments, and you have no choice but to send people to Atlanta, where abortion is still legal for now.
So we did, in fact, cancel about 100 appointments. We had 21 people who were in our waiting room for first day appointments, which in Alabama, a person has to come in, have an ultrasound, have counseling, have materials that the state mandates she must read or they must read before they have a procedure. So they were in preparing to do that. You have to then leave for 48 hours and then come back. We knew that the decision was coming. We assumed it was coming the following week. So we were still seeing first day patients with the assumption that we could have them in at least on Monday and still make it before the decision would come down on Monday if it did. So we were blindsided, quite frankly, especially because we had had a provider who had a family emergency that week. So we were only able to do one day of services the week prior. We scheduled 75 appointments that day before the decision. And of them, 67 showed, and thank goodness they did, because otherwise the amount of people that we would have had to turn away would have been almost twice as much. We are able and have been able to move all of those patients who had begun services with us to clinics in Atlanta and support that, but we no longer know what we are allowed to do. And that's the most frustrating and terrifying part of this new landscape, is that we have an attorney general that is saying that he is looking at statutes to see if there is in fact some way to punish a person for helping someone leave the state to obtain an abortion, even if that abortion is legal in another state. We believe that because we already began patient relationships, because we already started medical care with these patients, that to not finish this care and assist them in whatever way was necessary would be a dereliction of our medical duty. But as new people are calling, we don't know what we are legally allowed to do. And that's purposeful. That is something that the state wants us to be in fear of, because they can hoard information that way and isolate people who are still becoming pregnant and still want an abortion.
Well, it seems like the legal landscape is just so chaotic right now. Andrea, we were just following what was going on in Texas over the last 3 days, and it's very confusing. The ACLU on June 28th posted that a state court has blocked Texas's pre-Roe ban in response to the lawsuit. So abortion up to 6 weeks of pregnancy will resume at some clinics, but then that was overturned. So what is the status in Texas this morning?
Right. So very confusing as well in Texas. We were able to sue the state because our attorney general felt that even though Texas had trigger bans set to go into effect when and if Roe fell, the attorney general felt that pre-Roe law should be enacted immediately. So together with the Center for Reproductive Rights, we were able to sue, and we got a little bit of relief. We got a temporary restraining order against that, saying that the pre-Roe law could not be enforced. But we knew, just given the climate of the state, that they would eventually fight back. So we got to see patients for a few more days within the limits of the already restrictive ban of Senate Bill 8 within 6 weeks. But then we were quickly shut down again by the state overturning that or lifting that temporary restraining order. So at the moment, there are legislators in Texas that feel that the pre-Roe law, which criminalizes abortion of all kinds, should be enforced. And that means, you know, our doctors, our nurses are at risk if they provide with criminal penalties, as well as, you know, issues with the medical board, nursing board. And so unfortunately, we did have to stop services again.
And Kim, I mean, obviously, this is so incredibly stressful and jarring for everyone involved. And we've done so many shows about how this will greatly impact poor people, people of color, Black women. According to the Texas Tribune, about 40% of women who get abortions in the United States are Black. And advocates say that they are largely going to bear the brunt of all of these limits. What are you hearing from people you're in touch with across the country?
So we have really been focusing on being a support here in California. As you've heard from the other two speakers in other states, it's unknown what's happening. And so right now, the right to abortion care, as we know, is still the law of the land in California. And as you said, you know, what the decision does, it unveils the blatant disregard for the health and well-being of Black women and birthing people. And so we are really focusing on education, you know, letting those know in California that, you know, the right to abortion care is still legal here. And then reaching out to our sisters in other states to see how we can support them. And you know, passing one thing that Black Women for Wellness does, we have a policy arm. And so we're working on passing legislation that will give us more funding support here in California and access support here in California as well.
Well, I want to open up the phone lines. We're already receiving a few emails. If you have any questions for our guest today about what they're dealing with post-Roe, abortion is now banned in at least six states, although this is changing by the day. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. You know, getting ready for the show, I just felt like my head was spinning. There's personal stories to focus on. There's the story of the 10-year-old that got so much media attention a couple of days ago. And I just wonder, given that you are in the trenches, what do you think the conversation needs to focus on at this moment and in the coming weeks? Andrea, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think a lot of supporters of these bans don't really realize the impact on real people. Mm-hmm. You know, just at our clinic, we've had to turn down minors and turn down survivors of rape and pregnant people with fetal anomalies. And, you know, these are real lives that are being affected and will continue to be affected. And to ask someone to travel hundreds of miles for a medical procedure, for healthcare, is just, it's really disappointing and just devastating that that's where we're at in this country. And, you know, we're going to see more pregnant women die. The fact that the United States has an incredibly high maternal mortality rate, you know, all of these long-term impacts that, again, I don't believe supporters take into account when coming up with these laws.
And just for listeners who might not know about this, over the last 3 days, I believe, there were so many stories about the case of a 10-year-old rape victim in Ohio who was 6 weeks pregnant and could not receive an abortion in her own state and was forced to travel to Indiana for the procedure. And as Andrea says, this is one story of so many. What are your thoughts, Robin? What should the conversation be focusing on right now and in the coming weeks?
I very much want to focus on the people who can't leave their states, because we talk about how it's unfair, it's harsh that people now need to travel multiple states in order to obtain an abortion. But the reality is that the people who were coming to my clinic, first of all, already had come multiple states, but many of them were in Alabama. Many of them were in the city in Alabama and found the burdens that were placed on them just to get to our clinic were already almost insurmountable. When we're looking at what a post-Roe landscape is going to look like, we need to center and acknowledge the fact that the most marginalized communities are the ones who will not be able to leave. They're the ones who will be in their state, either giving birth or finding other means to try to have their own miscarriage because they are too young or they have too many children and are not able to get time off of work. They are people who are undocumented. They are people who have disabilities. There are so many reasons that a person cannot travel in order to get an abortion. And we are spending so much time focusing on all of these places they can go in order to receive them, but we're not spending nearly enough time talking about what happens to those who cannot go anywhere.
Exactly. And then if they cannot go anywhere, and if they have no choice but to carry the pregnancy to term, what then? Vice had a really good segment, and we met a very young woman who had a child and is now homeless. And she got enough money to stay in a hotel room, but she had to go to a food bank, and they offered her diapers for her child. And she just broke down in tears, basically saying, I'm doing this by myself. And so far, this is the only help that I have received. So Robin, these are the other stories that we really have to focus on.
Those are the other stories. And also we need to look at the fact that as we're always talking about people's lives are going to be in danger. Honestly, I'm not concerned about the people who are going to be trying to manage their own healthcare. This is something that has happened for decades, for centuries, that people have always found ways to be able to terminate a pregnancy if they needed to. I am just as concerned, and I believe that the greater risk is going to be to all of the people who are going to be forced into giving birth simply because they are not going to have access to prenatal care, especially not early on. These are the people who do not have access to insurance. They do not have access to doctors. They do not have preventative care. And our hospitals in Alabama are just terrible. They are so bad. That is where the real health risks are. It's in giving birth, not in getting medication and managing your own miscarriage.
And we'll talk about some of the statistics around giving birth in just a minute. But I also wanted to ask you the same question, Kim. What do you think we need to be focusing on right now and in the coming weeks?
Well, what we've been focusing on is, you know, right now in a country where Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related causes, you know, stripping away the right to an abortion care, it's just downright cruel for women. This decision, it denies our humanity and dignity. It denies us the capacity, you know, to have autonomy over our body and the opportunity to decide how our pregnancy outcome looks on our own terms. You know, a lot of what has been discussed today around, you know, women having access or the ability to get abortion care, it also happens here in California. Even though, you know, it's legal, we have some very rural areas. You know, as funding is cut, abortion clinics have been closed and restricted. And so we see the same things here. You know, I was just speaking with one of my providers a couple of weeks ago, because I also work for a organization, a medical clinic that is a federally qualified health center. So we're not allowed to provide abortion care and really not allowed to, they don't want us speaking really on abortions. And so, you know, we have women that have been coming into our clinics that, you know, share the same stories that, you know, they are now carrying a pregnancy that they did not want to to carry to term because of the lack of access, the lack of information, and the lack of financial support. So we're seeing it here in California as well. And you know, so like I say, what I feel like the conversation should be around is, you know, is education, is voting. You know, we have an election that's coming up in November in California. We will have an abortion proposition that will be on the ballot to expand abortion services. So educating on, you know, getting out to vote, going out lobbying, making these legislators be held accountable, letting them know, like, you know, what we want to see happen. So it's a time to mobilize and just start getting out there and letting our voice be heard.
Kim, to your point, Stacey Cross, the CEO of Planned Parenthood Marmonte, headquartered in San Jose, wrote an op-ed in the Mercury News and said exactly that, that many Central Valley patients in California are forced to take a day off work, find childcare, and drive more than 100 miles round trip to get an abortion. And also, in the Central Valley, there is an acute shortage of doctors and clinicians. So, you know, even though it is safe in California and many clinics are trying to expand, for so many who live in places like the Central Valley, it is difficult to get care.
Yes, I actually live in the Central Valley. And, you know, I was just speaking with a colleague that works at Planned Parenthood. And I was asking them, I said, you know, where would someone, like, for instance, I'm in Stockton, where would someone in Stockton go to seek, you know, abortion care without having to drive to Oakland or San Francisco? And there's nothing, you know, and don't throw in Fresno area or even up northern, where I used to work in Chico and Redding. There is an abortion clinic in both of those areas, but when you go farther north, there's nothing. So, and then don't throw in if a woman needs a second trimester abortion, then you're throwing in an extra day of, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how you're going to make this work. So it sometimes get exhausting just trying to navigate through a procedure that we shouldn't have these many restrictions and have to navigate through. I mean, this is just, abortion care is a part of reproductive care that should be like any other medical procedure that you're, you know, needing to have happen and not be so stigmatized and regulated.
Right. Well, and in the LA Times piece I mentioned, we meet Jerrica, who's 26, who traveled from Oklahoma. And she said, I've got 2 children, ages 3 and 4. The eldest is autistic. It is a lot to manage. She said she's already taken time off from nursing school to travel to Texas, and she now faced another trip. She said if no clinic could take her, she would have no choice but to carry the pregnancy to term. And we'll talk more about that after a break. Kim Robinson is independent liaison on reproductive issues, including the health of Black women, for Black Women for Wellness, a Los Angeles, California-based organization that aims to expand healthcare. Andrea Gallegos is executive director of the Alamo Women's Reproductive Services in San Antonio, Texas. Robin Marty is operations director for the West Alabama Women's Center and author of Handbook for a Post-Roe America. Robin, I just realized we have to let you go. Final thoughts. What can people do right now? We're getting a lot of emails from people in California who want to know what they can do to support people who you try to treat but now can't.
So the most important thing that a person can do right now is get as involved as possible in their local politics. We know now that when it comes to keeping clinics open, when it comes to making sure that there are not hyper-local bans, when it comes to being able to provide financial support to people, we see this work being done in the cities. We know that city councils are places that will make zoning laws that can close clinics. So you want to be involved in your city council. Pay as much attention as possible as locally as you can. And this is important for anyone, wherever they are, to invest locally, to do their politics locally, to make sure that they are eyeing what is going on locally, because the entirety of this conservative movement takeover happened when states were all taken over after the 2010 election. And so then Democrats decided to start looking more at states, and we saw that Republicans came for cities. It's always going to be the most hyper-local fight that can happen, and we gotta know how to pay attention on all fronts.
Well, Robin, as always, thank you for the work you and everyone at your clinic does, and we'd love to have you back.
Of course, Rose, anytime. Thank you.
Thank you. And Kim, do you need to go? Or can you stay?
I think I can stay on.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much. Today, we are talking with clinic workers and reproductive justice advocates about what they are facing now that abortion is banned in at least 6 states, with more to come. No exceptions for rape or incest. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, media analyst Ann Nelson will discuss her book, Shadow Network, Media, Money, and the Secret Hub of the Radical Right. She writes about the Council for National Policy, a powerful group of Republican operatives, evangelicals, oil barons, and gun lobbyists who formed during the Reagan administration. Their goal was to attack civil liberties and the social safety net. They eventually collaborated with the Koch Network to transform our current political landscape. And here we are. So what will it take? We've been asking this question for many, many years. What will it take to fight this powerful machine? We hope you can join us tomorrow. Thursday, we will be speaking with doctors about how they are navigating what we are currently facing. Abortion banned in at least 6 states, with more to come, with no exceptions for rape or incest. Today, we're joined by Andrea Gallegos, Executive Director of the Alamo Women's Reproductive Services in San Antonio, Texas. Kim Robinson is an independent liaison on reproductive issues, including the health of Black women for Black Women for Wellness, a Los Angeles, California organization that aims to expand healthcare. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. What questions do you have for our guests? What are your thoughts about where we are today and where we are going? You can also email yourcall@kalw.org, or you can tweet us at yourcallradio. I want to spend a little more time just talking about some of the patient stories. Andrea, in the LA Times piece, we learn that another woman who was at your clinic when you had to tell them that you could not treat them, she could not control her anger. She traveled from Oklahoma to Texas. She was referred by another clinic that stopped doing abortions after the state passed restrictions. She said, "Some of us, we drove too far for this." Another patient said she drove 145 miles from Corpus Christi. And Dr. Braid said, "I'm sorry, my hands are tied. I can go to jail for life and be fined $100,000. So, Andrea, what about the patients that Robin talked about, the patients that just cannot travel anymore? What are they going to do? What are you hearing from them?
Right. I mean, I think the alternative is a forced pregnancy. And, you know, like the other guests, that's exactly who we're worried about, too. We will see patients who are able to access abortion by traveling or finding a way to get the pill mailed to them. And they'll have self-managed abortions at home, which are perfectly safe. And then we'll have a majority that will not be able to do that. And, you know, let's face it, that is exactly what forced pregnancy is. And we will see, I think, a tremendous impact on, like I said, the maternal mortality rate. We'll see an impact on the economy. You know, we don't live in states that have Medicaid expansion. We don't have paid maternity leave. You know, there's so many other long-term factors that are going to disproportionately affect the population that cannot access this healthcare.
what about sheer desperation? The New Yorker had a piece about what happened when the decision came down at the Houston Women's Clinic, the largest abortion provider in Texas. And counselors said they have already known of patients who had thrown themselves down a flight of stairs or had seriously contemplated suicide. I mean, this society doesn't like to talk about these issues. I mean, you get some of these stories in some media outlets, but where have they been over the last 10 years? We talked about that on our media roundtable on Friday. A medical assistant at this clinic said, "We will see more babies in dumpsters." What are your thoughts on that?
Which person are you addressing? I can answer.
Sure, go ahead,
I can
Kim.
Give my thoughts. This is Kim.
Yeah.
So, you know, those stories have always been here. They just haven't been publicized. I've been working in abortion care going on 20 plus years now. And the stories, you know, when you say of desperation, I've seen those stories. I've heard those stories. I've held those women's hands. For 14 years, I was director of health services for Women's Health Specialists. It's a feminist women's health center in Northern California. And so I have been involved with thousands, over thousands of abortion procedures over that time span. And, you know, you hear the stories here in California of, you know, young women that are scared, don't know what to do, don't know where to go. You know, they're at school, you know, give birth in the bathroom stall and leave the baby there. Or, you know, you hear the story, the dumpster stories, you hear the stories of, you know, babies being left at hospitals and fire stations. You know, you see and hear the desperation in women's voices when they don't know where to go and what to do. And you know, my heart just goes out. I'm, you know, 50 this year, and I have always had the right to abortion care. I have two daughters who are still, you know, in childbearing ages, and one is actually in San Antonio, and I've been talking with her because she's in a state where abortion is no longer available to her. And you know, and I said, well, you know, you hear the memes and the jokes of the camping trips. Oh, you know, you need to come to California for a camping trip, but we even have to be careful about that because you women can be tracked and like we have mentioned before, prosecuted. You know, we've been educating women on being careful of even, you know, what you're putting in your phone as you're tracking your menstrual cycle and using these apps, you know, and information that you're sharing, you know, on your social media page about your reproductive cycles and you know, what's happening. And so, and it's just mind-blowing that we're now at a stage where we really have to be careful of what we say and what we do and what we share. And so, yeah.
Andrea, I just got word that we have to let you go. Do you want to just leave us with some final thoughts if you have a minute? Oh, maybe Andrea already dropped off. Well, we want to just thank Andrea Gallegos, Executive Director of the Alamo Women's Reproductive Services in San Antonio, Texas. She had to jump on a plane. You know, Kim, I think what's so difficult about this is when we first learned that the Republicans were going to go as far as no exceptions for rape or incest, some people in the movement said, yes, this is horrific, but we shouldn't focus on the most extreme cases because this is a safe and legal procedure. And no one has to explain why they need an abortion. That is all true. But I feel like, and I'd love to get your take on this, because I think the media have done a poor job of really talking about all of these cases, the cases you just mentioned, we do have to talk about the extreme cases because you know, 15, 20 years ago, they were not embracing no exceptions. And now they are proudly saying on the cable shows, you know, Kristi Noem from South Dakota, politicians from Mississippi, white men from Mississippi, I should say, are basically saying, well, it is a life and we support life, even though they don't support policies to support life. And if so be it, no exceptions for rape or incest. That is where we stand. So I feel like we do have to focus on these horrific, extreme, desperate cases.
Yes, we do. And I will emphasize, you know, what you mentioned earlier, that it shouldn't matter why a woman is needing to have an abortion. But when you add to that, that the reason that this woman is needing an abortion is because she's been raped or she's been, or, you know, or incest has happened, like you mentioned, earlier, it just puts another layer of not wanting to continue in with this pregnancy because of what has transpired. You know, I often think about, you know, in my own culture when, you know, just going back to when slavery was around and women didn't have autonomy over their bodies. You know, I feel like this decision is taking us all the way back there to where women don't have autonomy over their bodies. We can't make the best decision for us, what's right for us, and, you know, predict how this pregnancy outcome is going to happen for us. And when you, you know, it's so interesting because I had this conversation with a male cousin of mine's a couple of days ago where, you know, he was like, well, that's the only way that I support abortion is if the woman was raped or, you know, if there's incest. And why can't we just support abortion regardless of, you know, why the woman is needing it? And so I, you know, that's just my thoughts on it. But like I say, I do get it that, you know, when there is rape or incest, then, you know, it just adds another layer to it because this is a pregnancy that, you know,
yeah. And that's so important to talk about. Over the weekend, a woman went on Twitter and talked about her horrific experience of being abused by a family member when she was young. Mm-hmm. And there were at least 100 comments from other people who said, it was my father, it was my stepfather, it was my mm-hmm. brother, it was my uncle. And again, this is something that we just don't talk about in this society.
No, we don't, because, you know, it will bring up something in a family that you want to kind of sweep under the rug. You know, you don't or don't want to acknowledge it or but, you know, what does that do for the woman who have had that experience? You know, there's shame that's being placed on the woman or the feeling of, you know, it was my fault that this happened. There's just so much that goes along with, you know, when a woman is raped or when incest happens. And then now you have this pregnancy that you're, like we're saying, forced pregnancy, forced birth, you know, that is being put upon the woman to also burden that. Yeah, I just don't know where this country is headed, and it's scary.
What do you think we should call this? We just got an email from Ruby who says government mandated pregnancies. I'm also hearing people say forced births. What do you think we should mm-hmm. call this?
Well, it's a forced birth. I mean, it both I haven't heard that government mandated pregnancy.
Yeah.
Well, when you look at it that way, it puts the responsibility on our government, which they right now should have that responsibility put on them, because this decision, you know, like we said in the beginning, I knew at some point this decision, you know, was coming. You know, when you asked a question earlier, how did you feel when it actually happened? I wasn't shocked. I was just disheartened. But when the Trump administration started stacking the Supreme Court justices, you know, with a lot of conservative justices, I knew at some point that this could be a reality. I didn't think that it would happen now, this soon, but I knew it would come. And so, you know, now that this has been put up on us by a government entity, you know, the highest court in our country, the government should take some responsibility for this. And, you know, and owe women a way to show support and overturn some of these bans. But the only way to do that is for us to make them be held accountable. So getting out, speaking to your legislators and voting.
You know, we're going to get to calls in a minute, and thank you for holding. We will be with you in just a minute. But since you brought this up, Kim, we're getting a few messages from listeners. Mira writes, the Democrats don't seem willing or capable of addressing the real economic and healthcare needs of Americans any more than Republicans. If they were, we'd have better labor rights and a single payer healthcare system. It has been pretty shocking just to see the lack of response from high levels of the Democratic Party. Politico had a piece that said Republicans are shocked by what they've heard from Democrats so far. What are your thoughts on the Democratic response at high levels?
You know, I saw this meme and it said Democrats and Republicans are like bad parents that are fighting amongst each other, but our country is the one that's hurting. And that is so true. And what I have noticed just locally, and that's in California, that not an astounding number of Democratic legislators have been vocal, but there have been some. And, you know, and what we have done is gone out to those who have been vocal and say, you know, get your colleague to also be as vocal. Again, we have to hold them accountable. We have to get out there and mobilize and be a voice, because they're not going to do it just on their own. You know, some will, but most won't, because it's a fight. This is a very controversial topic, and they're going to be up for re-elections. So I'm not surprised that it hasn't been as vocal as we would like it to be. You know, but like I say, we have to get out there and make them have a voice.
Kim Robinson works with Black Women for Wellness, a California-based organization that works with partners and allies to provide a safe space for those in need of abortion services. Let's hear from a few callers who've been waiting patiently. Let's go to Melody in Oakland. Hi, Melody. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. Can you hear me all right?
Yes. Thank you.
When Roe v. Wade was still legal, there was a DA in Hanford that arrested two women for stillborns. Later, they were released and the charges were dropped because of the outcry. So that's the next tier. Mm-hmm. Women are going to be held responsible for their activity, for causing a stillborn or a miscarriage. And there will be investigations, much like they did in Nazi Germany. So maybe you want to address that issue. And that was right here in California.
Yeah, thank you for that. In fact, we're going to have some legal people on soon, lawyers, to talk about this. There's a piece in NBC, Roe is over, prison sentences are on the way. Women are being incarcerated for their family planning decisions, and the floodgates on new punishments are about to open, which is absolutely frightening. Here's a piece from the Washington Post just 2 days ago. Texts, web searches about abortion have been used to prosecute women. The data privacy risks associated with abortion are not hypothetical. Cases in Mississippi and Indiana could preview how digital evidence could be used post-Roe. There's so much here, Kim. What are your thoughts on all of this?
Yeah, I think that was when you were talking about the digital evidence. That's what I was referring to as, you know, tracking your menstrual cycle and sharing information using apps. When the caller is talking about, you know, women being held accountable for having miscarriages, and being investigated for that, that's something that's already happening. You know, we hear those stories a lot, even before this decision. And so now it's just going to heighten it. And not only will it heighten the criminalization of women, but it's also, as we were talking, it will heighten the criminalization of providers. And so, you know, and providers and women, you know, our whole healthcare system is going to be under attack around reproductive care, abortion care. And, you know, I think we need to meet this moment, you know, with a response and a solution that's going to be grounded in the equity. And it's going to center, you know, the needs of women and communities that would be most harmed, you know, by this rollback. And so these are stories that now is going to be, it's going to come out more now because of this decision, but it's always been there. But now we will probably hear more about it.
Right. And according to this NBC piece, National Advocates for Pregnant Women reported that from 2006 to 2020, more than 1,300 women in the U.S. had been investigated, detained, or arrested because of their pregnancy outcomes. Many of these were for miscarrying after otherwise non-criminal acts, such as attempting suicide, falling down a flight of stairs, and drinking alcohol. I mean, again, 2006 to 2020, and now these numbers will most likely go up. We will definitely do a show about this. So thank you for that important question, Melody. Let's go next to Karen in Oakland. Hi, Karen. Thank you for holding.
Well, thank you. This is a really depressing topic. One of the things that I think is really important that is that obstetricians and gynecologists need to take political action, and so far they have not because they've been so afraid of being jailed, and I can understand that. However, the College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists and the AMA really need to be firm in showing that this repressive, and I should say reactionary, Supreme Court has done what they say they don't want to do, which is having government control healthcare. So they're totally against socialized medicine, totally against one care system. However, what they're doing with this and with women's and girls' health is exactly putting government in controlling healthcare. And these physicians need to take action. One of the things that I think they could do, and this is incredibly dangerous, and I know they won't, is to say, okay, we're going on strike. We're not going to provide healthcare for pregnant women at all until this is eliminated, the abortion ban is gone. This is incredibly dangerous, I know, but I would really like to see them take some type of radical action.
And well, thank you for that. And we're definitely going to bring on some providers on Thursday's show, so we will ask them about this. Some OBGYNs have been speaking out on Twitter because they are really angry about a lot of the misinformation and lies that are ending up in the national media by anti-choice activists. So we'll also talk about that. Kim, before we let you go, I just found a number from ABC News. The reversal of Roe could lead to a dramatic increase of babies born in the United States, including thousands of high-risk births. More than 150,000 births could occur in the U.S. every year following the reversal of Roe v. Wade. I mean, we're going to do so many shows about all of this. Where are they going to get their health care, their food, their housing, their education? I mean, there's so many questions and conversations that need to be had. What are your thoughts on this? 150,000 births a year.
Well, you know, like I said, previous, you know, in a country where, you know, Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely, you know, to die, from these from pregnancy related issues. The forced birth, is going to carry, and I'm just going to use that because that's a term that a lot of people, not that that's what I consider it to be, or but, you know, that's the term that's being coined right now, forced birth. You know, it's going to bring a lot of more trauma to women. When you look at disparities, you know, in our community, when you look at, you know, Black women are at the highest, have the highest rates of, you know, high blood pressures, diabetes, you know, a lot of health conditions. And then when you add being forced to continue a pregnancy that, you know, can put your health at risk, or when you look at being forced to continue a pregnancy where, you know, you're already struggling financially trying to make ends meet. And we are creating these bans that will force women to continue pregnancy, but we're not creating any solutions for, you know, when that birth happens, how to support women in that. And so it boggles my mind how you disregard the health and well-being of women. For what reason? When you say that you're supporting life, that's not supporting life. So, you know, I thank you for this important, you know, conversation, and we'll have many, many to come. But, you know, we're going to have to try to figure out some solutions.
Well, Kim, thanks to you and your team for your important work. And you're right. We have to just keep having these conversations, and we'd love to have you back.
Thank you. I'd love to be back.
Thank you so much. Kim Robinson works with Black Women for Wellness, a California-based organization that aims to expand healthcare and also provide people with a safe place for reproductive care. And you can find more information about the work they do at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to BSOL for producing today's show, Kevin Vance for engineering our show. We know these shows are depressing, and we have to keep talking about what's happening on the ground. If you have any show ideas, please email us, yourcallradio.org. Call at kalw.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.